A wise man once said, you will find that this universe is made up of many points of view. That was Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi. Modern world, here's a funny place. We've got stories. I like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. They're probably the biggest that we've got. They're a trilogy. They both end with The Return of the Jedi and The Return of the King. Me being me, trying to make sense of things, I've come to realise that, yeah, looking at history, we've been on a war planet. We're on a war planet. And just like in any one-on-one relationship or the planet as a whole, when it comes to military strategy, you know, it's best to keep secrets to people you don't really trust. You don't really want them to know what you know. And looking at history, I can see that we have all been refugees of warfare. You know, us being civilians, we are all under a government which is, at the end of the day, a Ministry of War, Parliament. What they're doing, their main objectives is colonization and securing, you know, resources and using them up. I'm convinced, by looking at history, that Western world has been created by Christians. I'm obsessed with looking at the biblical ethos or the whole situation that the Christians, or this Judeo-Christian point of view, is laying on, like letting us kind of get being part of the game. There's a game. The Masons, this is all kind of a play on words, but it kind of makes sense if you're a little bit dyslexic or really crap at spelling. But Masonic and Messianic, the more you look into the Masons, the more Judeo-Christian they get. To understand what they believe of history, if you want any book on Atlantis, if you want any good information on Atlantis, you go to a Freemason author, because they love it. They love Atlantis. And they also love pre-Diluvian flood history. They put the Bible into consideration as historical fact. I know that the Masons are an ancient cult, and they keep information secret. So going along with that lead alone, you know, makes me wonder, is history a giant conspiracy? Are they hiding facts away from us? The Queen is the head of the state in this country. She's gangster. She's on the money. If you get a £10 note, okay, you got the Queen, Christian, yeah, got that. Go on the other side, Charles Darwin. All right, opposing, conflicting view, but, you know, he started the, well, scientific kind of he started what we know as modern science to a degree. I mean, like, there's lots of people that have helped, like Newton. He says we're all standing on the shoulders of giants, which is a great way of describing it. Darwin is one of these giants. Just the two people I just said, Newton and Darwin, they're both part of the Royal Society of Science. I can see where their funding has come from. If you see the Natural History Museum, it's a temple for science. You go into there, you see an old dinosaur skeleton, but if you go up the staircase, there's Darwin in a giant marble statue sitting in a chair. When I was younger, you know, being a bit silly, I honestly thought he was God. Looking at science, you can see it theologically. You can see it as a religion itself. I mean, any belief, in a way, like, I know it's dictated, you know, even to, like, a dogma for, you know, to children at school, you know, this is the way the world is, according to science, or according to mainstream, authoritative, official science, anyway. But, you know, what just like Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi said, we are free to, you know, make up our own minds, and everyone has their own point of view. We're all living parallel universes. Each individual is living in their own universe, but we are sharing a secular reality, and we're all helping each other out. Now, where I was going with Darwin was history. I'm convinced that Darwin is covering the Queen's back, just like she is, like, symbolically on the £10 note. Darwin has the Queen's back in the sense that he's brought up the idea of evolution, and the Queen is promoting it. She's got him on the £10 note, so she's investing and promoting Darwin's theory. I think that will cover up the true history of what has happened on this planet. The first stumbling block is the missing link. You know, mystery, mystery. Now, to say that we come from monkeys, yeah, it's all right. It's not what the Masons believe. The Masons believe in the supermen. They believe, like, well, they're called fallen angels, called Nephilim, they're called blah, blah, blah. If we look back at that part of the world, that time, like Noah time, you know, the Babylonians and Chaldeans, I think the migration of these people, the Chaldeans, moved into Europe slowly, like taking the land further north when the ice caps retreated, say like 7,000, 10,000 years ago. The ice caps retreated from Britain, Northern Europe. And believe it or not, scientists nowadays are saying that Atlantis had trees 10,000 years ago. So they're saying that the glaciers on Iceland weren't there 10,000 years ago, that it was habitable land. People lived there. But nowadays, it's under 3 kilometers of glacier ice. If that's a fact, then did Atlantis sink under a sea of ice? I mean, no one said what consistency the water was, you know, but it kind of makes sense, because if you look at the Atlantic Ocean, you know, the planet itself must have done something really nutty to, like, hide it like that. Coming back to the Chaldeans and the migration of, they went through the Mediterranean. Wherever they went, they taught languages and law and civilization. The languages were I see the Phoenicians and the Chaldeans as, you know, they were teaching other people, like, they taught the Greeks Greek, and then that, you know, merged into Latin. You got the entirety of the Celts, of the what they call them, the Gauls and the Gaels. These guys, you can see, you got Portugal, France was called Gaul, and then these Celts, like I said earlier, with if you're dyslexic, crap at spelling, you'd be great at phonetics. Lots kind of gets warped throughout time when it comes to spelling, and, you know, if you're traveling distances, then, yeah, things do get lost in translation and dialect. But back then, at that time period, there was a mother tongue. You can see that looking at ancient Welsh and Sanskrit, there's similarities, seeing similarities with the ancient Hebrew is different than the modern day Hebrew. They're all rather similar. Now they've changed, they're modernized now, yeah. But it's quite clear to see the migration of the Chaldeans with the names of the places, if you crap at spelling or dyslexic or whatever. It's the phonetics of the letters G and K. You got Chaldean, you got the K and the G you can change, and the the T and the D, because they're dental sounds. They're interchangeable also. So the Chaldean is the Celt, and the Gaul is like Gauldian. The Celts were the ancient Chaldeans. They went to Britain because there's a lot of resources there. There's a lot of tin, there's a lot of lead, there's a lot of loads of stuff, yeah, silver, loads and loads of minerals. I mean, it's the pressure of the glaciers that have created them. And they went to Cornwall, Scotland, Wales, wherever, to mine, take back all the resources, sell them on, you know, in Israel, you know, take them back to the Mediterranean and make a lot of dosh. You know, time went on, they became very wealthy, and the Romans wanted a bit of it. So they came on to the British shores. Like, they say that history is written by the victors. I'd say it's written by the Romans, which is, you know, like what we're talking about, the whole conspiracy of history. You know, them alone not making the connections with, like, Celts coming from, you know, the original Babylonians, you know, that kind of thing. They're not letting you in. Alternatives, you know? Alternative histories. It's either their way or the highway. Anyway, they came into Britain. A lot of the Celtic kings at the time, they knew it was good for business. They just bought into it. It was more of a cultural merge. There was confrontation with Celtic kings like Caradoc, who, you know, didn't want to bite into the Roman emperor's, you know, whole system. Like, they brought a culture of, you know, this Roman Greco architecture. They brought in the amphitheatres. They brought in, you know, the classics of drama, indoor plumbing. The Celt way of life was rather harmonious, you know, with nature, druidic, deeply spiritual. They didn't even write anything down. It was all passed through song, so everyone knew everything off by heart. So seeing how the Celtic kings dealt with this cultural shifting, and to, you know, even put consideration like Boudica, she was married to a Roman senate. I mean, like, if there's loads and loads of trade going on in these times, and, you know, well, slowly the languages were changing, just like it said in the Bible of, you know, the Tower of Babel, and they split the tongue. The Romans ended up, leaving us our culture, like their culture, to a degree. They subsided back only for hundreds of years later for the new influx of invaders, like the Saxons and the Angles and the Jutes and the Vikings. And according to this, the Masonic view of history, and to look at the phonetics of who these invaders were, you can relate them to the tribes of Judah, weirdly. Like the Denmark is originally the tribe of Dan, who moved to Denmark. The Juts, just like I said, the T and the D, the dental, so they're interchangeable, and you like, if they're from Jutland, you know, can you also say, like, Judea land? So, even looking at the it's not even phonetics when it comes to, you know, what the Romans called Scotland, they called Caledonia. And how clear is that to say that the Chaldeans of Babylon migrated to Scotland, and they call it Caledonia. Same with Ireland being called Hibernia. There's just a place down from Jerusalem called Hiberia, and it's that in Hebrew, it's like Hibernia, Hibernia. And even, it sounds funny, but the phonetics of Druid and the Jew, Druid, the Jew. Because there was a mother religion and a mother tongue. The mother religion was a Druidic one. And I feel that the royals, they have never forgot this. And they're from the Davidic bloodline. Blake, in his writings, he said Abraham, Moses, they were Druids. And they have kept these philosophies for so long, but keeping us civilians in the dark, non-Masons, about these connections, they put it into mainstream. It seems like, what, is this like an inside joke? You know, if the Olympic opening ceremony, it was all about Blake's poem, New Jerusalem. The royals played that song at the last wedding. It's their anthem. And that in consideration, it's like, well, where are they going with this whole thing? Like, you know, okay, so if they're saying, you know, the starting lines of the poem, and did those feet in ancient times walk upon England's pasture green, he's talking about Jesus. Like, what's that all about? Well, there's all that hearsay about Joseph of Arimathea being British. In the Bible, all it said is he's a pretty wealthy Jew. But yeah, you go to Glastonbury, and if anyone knows of the legend of the thorn bush, where Joseph, he went and stuck his staff in the ground and it turned into a Mediterranean thorn bush, which is not native to this land. I'm interested with this guy because they're saying that he was Galilean. He was Mary's uncle and he was Galilean. Is a Galilean a Gaelic? Is he a Gaul? And, you know, if you're in Scotland, you're a Gael. If you're in France, you're a Gaul. But if you're in Israel way, you're a Galilean. Or, yeah, second generation Chaldean. So, yeah, you got that link of, like, okay, so, yeah. If you go along with the whole thing of him being Gaelic, yeah, there's a chance that, yeah, Jesus might have come to England. You know, there's that thing with the Aquarian Gospel saying he pissed about all over the place. He went to India and he went to loads of places and, like, learned his wisdom. There's, you know, it's all hearsay. History is all hearsay. Oh, there's facts, but, I mean, you make your truth at the end of the day. But to say that he, like, Jesus, within the 10 years that are missing, yeah, did he go to Britain? Did Joseph go, hey, you don't like the Romans? Hey, well, you know, there's no Romans in England. Come here, you know? Like, got taught by the Druids all of his wisdom. Another interesting thing with Joseph of Arimathea is he was the last person to be seen with Jesus at the burial. He got permission off Pontius Pius at the time, the Roman general, and the guy was like, yeah, you take care of Jesus' body. Him being the head of family, it's tradition that he would embalm the body. And, all right, Jesus went missing. All right, he was the last person to be seen with him. Who put him in the cave? Joseph of Arimathea. Okay, all right. So there's a lead. Maybe he did just go to England and just, like, who knows? The Masons, they got so many freaking secrets. Like, oh, just put me in a pickle, really. Like, trying to... Not like it really matters, I don't know, but... I love... This matters, though. The people, be it myth or legend, because, you know, I'm not too sure if Jesus... Did Jesus exist? Mystery. This world is a thing of mystery. Did King Arthur exist? Mystery. But there's some similarities between the two. You know, everyone knows, like, 12 disciples, 12 knights of the round table. Yeah. They're both against the Romans. But Jesus, he was literally making a militia to overthrow the Romans. He didn't like the Romans. He was trying to get rid of them. King Arthur, the Celtic tradition, he didn't like the Romans. They were trying to stop that Roman culture. They knew it was destructive. And who wants to be like a zombie to the Roman emperor? You know, at the end of the day, they will regulate you and they will put you in, you know, your costume and make you into a robot. And you can see that in their military strategies. I mean, how they put everyone in legions and lines, and it's all very robotic and very neat and tidy. And it's, compared to how the Celts used to have warfare, or the Vikings, and, you know, they used to take the enemy to Muscaria mushroom and go berserk. Total different. But it's just the difference with mentalities. But that's what the Celts had a problem with buying into. They, you know, and that is the like essence of King Arthur and Jesus. They were totally against it. But this mentality is so relevant in modern day, because we've still got this Holy Roman Empire. They have created Western civilization. They created the game. I mean, like, the Masons, they are the people behind the scenes, you know, doing funny handshakes behind closed doors where it's none of your business. And you look in any Masonic lodge and they have the checkered board, you know, chess. Like, it's all about board games. I mean, they really like the idea of games, you know, and me being born into ignorance, like the rest of us, I don't know, I can only say for myself, but when I was born, I had to be taught in a way. I've been taught all my limitations of, you know, teachers at school. They've told me, like, all right, this is the way it goes. I'm young and I want to impress anyone older. And like, yeah, okay, cool, you know, I'll go along with it. I was at a great advantage being born in my generation, where we weren't beaten at school. But in my father's, but you know, in a past, the generation just before me, you know, it was only recent that they stopped beating at schools. But in that generation just before mine, yeah, the teacher would hit you. And it's a different way of education. Like, you're going to learn differently. If a superior will do that to you at a young age, it's going to psychologically affect you. But with, you know, the difference between, like, my father's upbringing and my, well, childhood anyway, he was telling me about, he's northern, he's from Stockport, and he was saying, the kitchen was called a scullery. And there was an open fire where, you know, there's no central heating. You had to go outside to go to the toilet and boil the kettle, and it's winter time, defrost the water. Like, total different thing than, you know, the situation that my childhood and many others of my generation have with Disney movies and Happy Meal toys and, you know, the whole gig. It's hype junkies, you know, there's like problems at schools where ADHD can't concentrate. Well, what do you expect? And, you know, it is quite a nutty world. Especially if you put in consideration that's created by Christians. Like, you know, you'd think that'd be all cool, but you know, the Catholics, they call themselves Christians, but they go against all the morals of Jesus Christ. You know, the Pope going around and waving a little dead man on a stick in your face. They are a death cult. They're making you feel bad about some guy that died that, you know, happened ages ago. I didn't even know that he existed or not. But, you know, they've been dictating this stuff for quite a while now. In the past, they get the Bible and be like, you know, you can't read it, it's in Latin, but go along with it anyway. And then they taught us how to read, and they were like, all right, you can read it now. Okay, if you don't go along with it, like, we'll still chop your head off. But now, in modern day, they're giving us the choice to read it or not. And, you know, you can jump, you can be an atheist, like Richard Dawkins, you know, modern day, on BBC. They are really promoting, you know, philosophy, people to, like, question. And it's just like Darwin before, like, they're allowing you to have an alternative, but their alternative. And it's still very controlled, like how all information is filtered in modern day. And there's a lot of it now with the internet and the information highway. There's a lot to sort out, and especially putting in consideration that the people like our teachers, you know, the Masons, who taught us literacy. They brought us into the game. It sounds funny, but I feel like modern day is the what we've all been waiting for. I mean, history was all just to create modern day, this nutty social experiment. I call it a social experiment because looking at what information is out there in the truth movement, there's characters involved like David Icke, Alex Jones. They're coming out with a lot of information, and it's all, especially with Jordan Maxwell, it's, you know, if you give a shit, you'll research it yourself and prove him wrong, or, you know, say that he's right. It's up to you to use your own discretion. But I have a problem with how these guys' tones are, their voices. Where are they coming from? You know, they're informing people with, you know, ludicrous stuff, like Project Camelot. I'm convinced that the truth movement is just a military ploy to make people more scared of the government than they really should be, just so that they protect their own backs, like, so people don't question, you know, and they don't want to, like, David Icke is selling himself with the whole reptile look. And, you know, at first I thought, oh, bless him, he just doesn't have much good PR, he doesn't really know what he's trying to... He's not good at graphic design, or, you know, I thought it was a bad move because it would put a lot of people off. Because, you know, he associates him with, like, reptile, and it's like, oh, that's me gone. You know, I'm out. Don't want anything to do with that silliness. But it's just like any of these publishers, the people that are coming out with this truth movement information, like these top dudes, like Ike and Maxwell and stuff. They give you truth, they lead you down the path a bit, but they do what they will when you're at the bottom of the garden. But like I was saying earlier, the Masons are teaching you, bringing you up to speed with what's going on for so long. They're giving you alternative views. Some are red herrings, but that's the beauty of it, because it makes you think for yourself. And you can't just follow blindly, because, you know, you lose yourself. You lose your own individual truth. And I think that's the whole... I'm convinced that the truth movement is created by the Theosophy Society. And the Theosophy Society, you're not too sure what the heck theosophy is. It's like theology, but it's the philosophy of God. They go around the world listening to what all spiritual religion, you know, cults have to say, and then they make a science out of it, a science of spirituality. And it is for like the intellectual psychic or intellectual sensitive. I enjoyed it when I got involved with them when I was younger, just being curious, and found that, at the end of the day, it's all very Masonic now. You know, people that run it, they you don't question certain things because, you know, I didn't get very good answers. there's still secrets. And originally, I thought that the Theosophy Society, originally created by Madame Blavatsky, she was a very talented mystic, so it seems, and I've heard she smoked ridiculous amount of tobacco, rolling up cigarettes before she stubbed the last one out. When she died, Theosophy Society turned to the Luciferian Trust. Bit of a giveaway for me. I don't know. You got the like Christian element of it. You know, they're using biblical terms as Luciferian. You know, was Lucifer like the light bringer? Yeah, in symbology. But is too much light a good thing? You can be blinded by the light. Yeah, every thing has its positive and negative. Even love. I mean, jealousy is twisted love, you know, or desire, you know, you get lust. I mean, there's good and bad in everything, even love. And like I said, you know, make up your own, you use your own discretion. I totally forgot where I was going with that. Yeah, that was it. I remember now. But Truth Movement, created by Tavistock, I mean, the Theosophy Society, with then I'm convinced it's got a lot to do with Nazis, with the Fuel Society, and that has links to the Masons and Atlantis. It's Germanic by where Fuel is in Greenland. They said Hitler was influenced by Blavatsky. The Nazis were very much into occultism. They really, really hip when it comes to knowing spiritual lore and stuff. It sounds really bizarre. That the elite of the world are really into. They know their stuff when it comes to spirituality, and I can see it when you look at the Arms of Dominion, the Royal Coat of Arms, and there's some of them where the lion and the unicorn cover up the writing in the middle, but on the Times newspaper, the lion and the unicorn are far enough apart so you could read the medieval writing in the middle. And it says, Oni Malu Ponce, and translated, that means shame on you who think evil of it. When I found that out, and I took a step back. It's like, who am I to judge? I mean, like, it's bizarre to think with what trauma they are putting the planet through. They are teaching us to problem solve, creative problem solving. I mean, what else is there to do in this world? Like, do you just want to destroy, or, you know, there's I feel people, earthlings, they're really kind, loving, caring creatures, just a little bit confused, and I can understand why. You know, secret societies, they're gonna give you a little bit of anxiety. I mean, most people would be like, okay, even if they do, you don't want to know about it, fair dues. Like I said, everyone lives in their own bubble, and, you know, thinks they're in their own box, and you live your own world, and it doesn't even matter if you know of Masons, or it doesn't matter. But this is why I'm on Dark City. Because a lot of people that are in Dark City just... I mean, I guess that's why you're here. Trying to make sense of what's going on. I've had fun trying to do it. Yeah, I was going to bring up a little bit of astrology anyway, because that's what the show's about. And I was going to bring up a star, and it's called Regulus. And Regulus is the brightest star in the constellation of Leo, and it's called the Heart of the Lion. Regulus, to the Egyptians, because the Egyptians and the Babylonians used to put each individual stars into account when, you know, doing their astrology. And Regulus, it represents, it is the vibration of it. It represents regulation and law. It represents the elite of the world. And in what vibe or what way that they, in what way they do regulate and they do, So the big frickin' thing about Regulus is it's moved from Leo to Virgo. So what does this mean? Well, Regulus, it's out of the Leo vibration now, and it's in the Virgo vibration. The Leo vibration, I mean, if you know any Leos, they're very, well, you know, a real, real, real Leo person. Like, you know, there's a playful child, you know, very jovial, like, drama, you know, likes to be center of attention, really hearty people. There's a lot of characteristics that really do come straight from, like, the lion itself. Like, they are cat people, and you can see it in their eyes. The lion, when it enters a pride which is not their own, the first thing that the male lion will do is kill all the young and put his genes in place. He's all like, you know, playful, like, childlike, you know, person with cat eyes. But he's, you know, there's a very genocidal nature to Leo, because it's all about family, it's all about blood, it's all about, you know, like, keeping your pride going, you know. It's been in Leo for 10,000 years, and that coincides with a lot of other ancient cultures. It parallels with a lot of their shifting of their time calendars. And it's a big deal, because it's such a slow-moving force, and now it's moved vibration to Virgo. They're calling this the return of the saintly king. You know, no more of these, like, ruling bloodlines and stuff. The saintly king will return. But what does this mean? You know, like, they say that Virgos, they have the head start in this life, because the Virgos, they have a very, very clear conscience when it comes to discretion. They have a great talent for it, and I'm generalizing, a very, 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 very Virgoan person would be, like, really clean, you know, does everything right. You know, it's got lovely handwriting, everything's just all lovely. Not saying all Virgos are like that, but, you know, the classic Virgo is. And this is why I bring up, you know, King Arthur and stuff, because I see when Regulus was in Leo, you know, people in power for 10,000 years, they haven't been too cool. They haven't been very nice. only because, well, if you're not part of the blood, if you don't have one of these ruling bloodline family, if you're not part of the family, if not part of the club, not part of Masons, not part of, you know, aristocracy, ruling class, it must be a thing of pride. You know, I guess it was 10,000 years ago that, according to the Bible, Lucifer fell down because of his pride, because he was the highest in God's choir. He fell to earth because of his pride, and now he is imprisoned here until something happens. Lucifer, Saturn, Satan, you know, just like John said, he rules the earth, and God allows him to rule the earth. Saturn is our teacher. Satan is our teacher. He's teaching us, but he's also the father of all lies, says the Bible. And I can kind of see that in the truth movement. I can also see how, if it is the return of the saintly king, and the Bible is only two books, and we all know, like, Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, and any good story has three books. The Bible's left us on a cliffhanger called Revelations, Apocalypse. Apocalypse means the unveiling. And it was Jordan Maxwell and Michael Sarrion coming to the stage and saying, this is the age of revealing. There is huge power shifts at the moment with the elite. And I'm going to go along with the churches, I mean the Catholic churches, this we'll see a lot of changes to come with them in our lifetime, and nothing will ever be the same again. We last Friday we had the BBC leaving London, which is huge. Lots of stuff is happening, and just got to find out what. But if it is a fact that, you know, these world elites are really into the Bible, then they're giving you a heads up of their plans. They're giving you a heads up of, you know, we're going along with a prophecy, we're going along with a story, and yeah, just like they're lacing it within the mainstream in modern day, like, is it an inside joke, or are they, it's just a tribute sort of thing? But yeah, Blake, what Blake has to say, and how they really were trying to tell us something. When the Olympic opening games was on, Blake said that the wisest men of all will be born in these times. You know, it is make or break, like, for everybody here. Extreme pressure makes a diamond. And if this is just a giant experiment, it is to teach us to think for ourselves and to be more of ourselves and, to be ourselves as much as we can be. And, yeah, just models. Being a good person and stuff. As much as it's the forces are against you. But that's what makes strength. Your greatest weakness is your greatest strength. Your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. Oh, well, time's up now. I've got to go. Thanks for listening.